Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
We have a liftoff. Brentford recorded their first win of the season. A 1-0 away win, of course, against bogey team Middlesbrough. But not bogey anymore, no, gents. Man. 2 wins in the space of 5 months. Incredible. What was it, 81 years before that, that you managed to get your last victory over at Middlesbrough? We're going to be hearing from what both Borough and Brentford fans had to say after that match about their team's performance. We're going to listen to the thoughts of head coach Thomas Frank and Ollie Watkins post-victory. We're going to look forward to the League Cup match against Cambridge on Tuesday night. The Bisotti crew will reminisce on Cambridge matches and players from the past. Some great memories there from the 98-99 season. Ex-Brentford players Lloyd Owusu and Darren Powell will recall that third division championship winning game at the Abbey Stadium. We're also going to be talking to Ollie Slack from Yabba TV about Cambridge's visit to Griffin Park tomorrow. It's the Brentford Fan Show. Me, Matt Biddle, here with the guys from Besotted. Billy the B. Grant, who's pointing at me already.
Are you out of breath, man? I mean, how action-packed was that? I mean, listen.
We're packed.
You know what happens?
Go on.
We win a game and we just cram it all in, you know what I'm saying? Because we don't know when we're going to win the next one. So that's what we did. Just throw it all in there like proper kitchen stink Siley.
We're so excited. We're definitely not going to stink it out today. Billy the B. Grant and Jerry the Cabby Burke with me as well. How are you, Jerry?
I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. You must be buzzing after the weekend's result.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Just sort of an hour and a half on a Saturday brightens your weekend and your next week.
Right. We are going to get onto it, but first a bit of chat about the transfer window, gents. It is finally shut. We were talking last week about what was going to happen. Neil Maupay eventually went to Brighton. Drew Yearwood came in. Brian Mbeumo came in from Troyes. Halil Dervişoğlu came in from Sparta Rotterdam.
Well pronounced.
Thank you. He won't join up with the club until January, of course. We did speak about Albion Ayeti. He ended up moving to West Ham, of course. And Saman Ghoddos as well from Amiens didn't come in.
No. And that was the big one as well, because that was the one that's really scuppered us as well. You know, if you just, like I said to you quickly, if you check out prideofwest.london, the podcast, we did a transfer deadline day podcast. It was literally minute by minute. It's very, very exciting. And we put it out about an hour after the transfer deadline was closed. So check that out still. We went through all the heartbreak that we had and all the joy as well. But like I said to you, Saman Ghoddos, he was going to sign and then it didn't sign in the end. The reasons were, and it's been floating around there for quite a bit now, basically it was a bit of an agent situation. There was his agent, stroke agents, basically made it a little bit more difficult. We spoke to our sources out in Sweden. We would speak to sources in Sweden, our Persian sources, and also our French sources, all at the same time, giving us all different information coming in at the time. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen. Yes, there was maybe a wage thing, but basically the goalposts kept moving and moving and moving and moving. And the thing is that this guy needs to get a move, because his move to Amiens, he wasn't scoring that many goals. Beforehand, he was brilliant and potentially he's a great player. But I think his agents just thought that he's, you know, they had a bigger fish than they did do and they didn't see the bigger picture. So Brentford, in the end, to be fair to them, from what I can gather from our sources abroad, they turned their back and said, listen, we're just going to have to leave without it. So it scuppered us, and obviously we went for Lyle Taylor, or Kyle Taylor, as we said in the podcast quite a lot,
really?
At the last minute. And the last minute bid went in for him as well. About $4 million, that was turned down by Charlton. And so we are left without a striker, or are we? That is the question, Jerry.
No, we're obviously going to move Ollie Watkins through the middle now. He's had the odd sporadic game there when Maupay has been missing in the last sort of year or two. So I'd be interested to see what happens. I kind of fancy him there. He's got all the attributes, doesn't he, to play up there. He's big, he's strong, he's quick. He just needs a run. I think 5 or 6 games, judge him at the back of that rather than first game. And he just needs to get used to his movement, his own movement, spaces to pick up and build relationships with the forwards and the midfielders around him.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to listen to Ollie Watkins a bit later on in the show. Some really interesting comments from him, of course, on that one. The new contract as well from Ollie Watkins going to be at the club until 2023 at least. There's an option of another year. But he, of course, scored the winner at the Riverside, gents, in a resounding 1-0 victory.
I mean, tell you something, it was just so resounding. I mean, listen, the thing is that, I mean, you really laugh, but if you're a Brentford fan, you've got to understand that the name Borough, I mean, we keep talking about this. Personally, we love playing Borough and going to them because we've got a really great relationship with their fans. We have a great time every time, even though practically we lose every single time. But we have a laugh. So it's a bit of a weird scenario there. But and we sit down, but most Brentford fans, they go, oh, geez, we don't want to play Borough again because we just know that we lose, even if we play brilliantly. So we, you know, the last time we broke the duck... up in last April, I think it was March it was. Great victory, and we were really happy about that. Now, we went up to Borough this time. Now, Borough were quite confident. They came off the two-all at Luton. They thought they should have got a win against Luton because they, I think they missed a penalty, didn't they? Or something happened up
yeah. That Sumbalonga blazed one over the bar. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. So they missed that. So they thought they should have got a victory then. So they were quite confident playing at home. The new Jonathan Woodgate playing this attacking football, as they said. And of course, we're going up there and we've completely changed our team. Had no idea who we were playing. Didn't have an inverted commas recognised striker. So there was a definite nervousness. I mean, we talked about it quite a lot in our little crew, didn't we?
Yeah. And it's you never. So I suppose you would never know what you're going to get go up there. But because the previous games, if you think it's been like Karanka or it's been Pulis and it's been that dogged, even Gary Monk when he was there, you know, they're not expensive managers or such, are they? So for us to go up there, is, you know, 81 years says it all, really. Mm. So to get another 1 year, it's brilliant. And to do it when, you know, you haven't had 90 minutes of brilliant play, you've just had that half, but they've dug in and... did exactly the sort of performance that you'd hope we had last year. We're seeing it in the first away game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering as well whether or not, because the thing is that, you know, when the fans go up to Borough, I mean, a lot of people said, I'm not even going to go up to Borough because we're just going to lose, whereas we didn't really care about the football. We just went anyway, so you went there and we lost anyway. You know what I'm saying? But you're just wondering whether or not actually some of it is a mentality thing where the players think we're playing Borough, so we're going to lose because we're always going to lose. Do you understand what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, that's been broken. I mean, last time it's been broken to a certain extent, but I just think this time was very much... I mean, last time we did go behind and we got two fairly quick goals. But this time, you know, we should have been behind at half-time, but we didn't. And I think maybe that mentality has been broken to a certain extent, which I think, you know, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, which might be to do with some of the new players that have come in,
yeah,
and maybe,
absolutely,
you know, a mentality that they've put into
and from
the
coach
players
as well, the mindset that he's putting into the players. You know, from day one, he's spoken about defensive mindset and being strong mentally, and we're starting to see it now in, you know, first two games of the season.
It's interesting, Billy, you mentioned the fact that you like going up to Borough because of the fans. So, just trying to paint a picture here. Are you guys, your friend, do you meet up for pre-match pints and stuff? So you're actually together as fans?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most away games we go to, we meet up with away fans. You know, Preston fans meet us off the train at sort of 8 o'clock in the morning, take us to these places that we've never heard of before.
Nice,
you know,
and early.
You know, we do about five or six different pubs, go to the game, then after the game we come back together. And then they do the same thing. They come down for the weekend down at Brentford and do the same thing. So we've got really good relationships with lots of fans from all sorts of different teams. It's quite a sort of, EFL, but it's quite a sort of a, and I don't say lower league, but it's quite a thing to do, you know, in our level, because I think what we found is when we go to Premier League matches, we go to places and you can't even get into the local pubs. You've got bouncers on the door and there's this mentality that you can't mix. Whereas with us, we try to sort of kind of, you know, facilitate and make sure these things happen. And even at Brentford, when we went up a level, when we went up to the Championship, and all of a sudden the police came in, we had a meeting with them and they were going, right, we're going to segregate the club pubs and we can have the home pubs with this one and the away pubs with that one. We went, no, we don't do this here. You know, we're Brentford and everyone mixes and we'll self-police our things, so you have to leave everything as it is. And they're really nervous about the QPR game and the Fulham game, and nothing went off the first season. And I think the second season after that, they said, actually, these guys know what they're doing. So, you know, that's just the way it is at Brentford. We like the fact that people can come in and, you know, sometimes there might be something that happens, but we'll deal with it ourselves and don't make it impinge on the bigger picture.
That's absolutely the way that it should be. Lovely to hear that story, Billy. And of course, you were in fine fettle after the game, working hard, getting views from both Borough and Brentford fans to hear what they had to say about the game.
Love Sport.
Yeah, this is Love Sport and the Brentford Fan Show with the guys from Besotted, Billy the Wee Grant and Jerry the Cabbie Burke. We've just heard the views from the fans. Interesting views, of course. Some saying, oh, I thought we just about deserved it. Others saying, I'm not sure We deserved it. It was one of those classic games of two halves. Borough, two disallowed goals. Of course, the second one, in my opinion, not really up for discussion. It looked miles offside. However, Jonathan Woodgate calling for VAR after the game because he felt they were hard done by. The question is, I suppose, were Brentford lucky? Did they deserve the win?
Again, if you use other people's arguments, say Brentford scored the goal, so they deserve the win. I mean, I think that argument is too easy to black and white, because if that is the case, then all you do is that you have a result at 5 o'clock, and then you go home and don't discuss it. I think that you always have numerous games where, you know, you could have had a game where you had 75 clearances off the line, hit the post 14 times and didn't score a goal, and the other team scored one goal, you know, from 40 yards, you know. That is the argument there. But in this case here, I think, yes, Brentford did deserve the win because we didn't go behind at half-time. Possibly we could have been behind at half-time. If it was last season, we probably would have been behind at half-time, but we didn't. And at half-time, to be fair to Thomas Frank and the team, they changed it up. They made the changes that they need to do. The mistakes that they're making at half-time, they didn't make them. And even the Borough fans, even on this little clips that we heard there, they said in the second half, Brentford came out. They came at us. They came in a different way. We didn't start giving away the ball like we did in the first half. And we were a different team. We scored the goal, a great goal. You see, Sergi Canos, I mean, he just absolutely took the pee down that wing, got the ball, crossed it in. You know, Ollie Watkins, you know, on an XG level, that was a proper big time XG goal, that was, because literally he's right in front of the goal, maybe just a goalkeeper there. Listen, you know, if he missed that, that would be Neil Maupay in Cardiff style, wouldn't it?
You can't miss those, can you? But I think, you know, I'm one of those who thinks if you score a goal, you deserve, regardless of chances that have been missed and stuff. You know, you have to take your chances. That's part of the game, isn't it? Taking your chances. And if you haven't taken them, then, you know, what do you deserve out of a game? So they're two goals that shouldn't have been, or whatever, you know. What I thought, one was quite clear, both were quite clear, really, the handball and the offside as well. So, you know, the game had stopped, the whistle had gone before he'd put it in the back of the net. So I can't really say why they're grumbling too much about it. Just, you know, I've lost the game. It's just that sort of upset because you've lost, really.
And as we say, you know, last season or the season before, you know, don't forget, you know, a couple of seasons ago, we were playing brilliant football. We didn't win a game for 2 months, you know what I'm saying? And everyone's going, oh, brilliant, you're Brentford, you're so brilliant. Yeah, we even went up to Borough and we like play them off the park. They're going, oh, why didn't you beat us? You're so brilliant. This time it's different because we've actually won the match. And we're wondering, you know, asking ourselves, what is the difference here? The one thing that we did have is that we have gotten, it's not all about one player, but Pontus Rjantsen. You know, there was a few defensive mistakes that were happening. We're giving the ball away. Ethan Pinnock looked a little bit shaky on the ball at times. And unlike Birmingham last week, who just couldn't be bothered to press us because they just couldn't be bothered. On the other hand, Borough were pressing us quite hard and they were forcing us to make mistakes. And I think they're still getting to grips with the system, exactly what Thomas Frank wants to do. And this is new for Ethan Pinnock because we're taking it up a next level. And we gave the ball away a few times. Borough got it back and they didn't create the chances, or didn't get the chances, didn't score the goals that they should have done. So we got away with it. But also, it's Pontus Janssen is out there shouting, but also he is encouraging his teammates and slapping them on the back and all these things. And I think this makes a massive, massive difference. And I think we know now the reason why we've brought him in as a leader, because we've missed that, haven't we, Jerry?
Yeah, it's just huge. We've not really, I mean, Harley Dean, really, sort of that sort of chest pump thumping captain. Before that was Douglas, really, you know, someone who's gonna, when players make mistakes and players aren't putting it in, you want someone to go out and go, look, this isn't good enough. And when they start doing that, then that goes around the rest of the team and they all start lifting their game. And I think Jansen's going to be that style of captain for us. But again, I go back to the point, I think it's the whole defensive mentality that Thomas Frank's been putting in there from probably since the day he took over last season. You know, it's defensive mindset. Enjoy defending, get back in time, do it quickly. And we're seeing that. And this gets, you know, if you go out and Borough and keep a clean sheet in your second game, or your first away game, then it sets a tone and sets a benchmark for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely does. And there were lapses of concentration in that first half. Like, say, Ethan Pinnock with the goal that never was, that opener that he kicked off the park. David Raya chasing after the ball that he shouldn't really have been worried about. Jean-Vier giving the ball away when Britta Sombalonga hit the post. And obviously, Thomas Frank got the guys in at half-time, gave him a good talking to. Here's what he had to say.
And I was very disappointed with the first half, and the players was very disappointed with themselves because they know they can do better. And the good thing was that they showed it second half. We talked about three things, and of course some tactical bits, but three things we need to be more aware. They can't take quick free kicks, and you know we go down with our heads down. Every situation we need to be aware. We were not aware enough first half. Second thing, we were too soft in duels, in pressing, in get on it under the ball. And third thing, which was maybe the biggest thing, we were simply not good enough on the ball. We throw the ball away, I don't know how many times, too many touches, bad decisions, not the quality we normally do. And second half, I think we changed all the three areas and they stepped up. And we played some more clever balls into our tens instead of to one of the eight midfielders and stuff like that. Because as you see throughout the game, the chances that Middlesbrough had, mainly I think they only had chances first half, what I would call bigger chances, was when we throw the ball away. It was not in open play. I think we, in general, defended very well. And it's very good and nice to sit on the bench and be okay calm throughout second half, even when it went 1-0 up away against a good side. And we looked just solid and good defensively. I think there was some, I need to watch it back, but I think there was some extremely good blocks down there in the end from a lot of the defenders. But the desire to defend in general was extremely good from the team, and we need that if we want to take a step forward. But I must say that the 3/4 centre-backs did very well together with David and Pontus in the middle. Organising, controlling, and Rico and Henrik, and I would say the whole team, they showed they love to defend today and they need to do that. So I guess so disappointed when we don't dominate the game. I know we can't dominate all games, but we want to have the ball and we want to try to play forward and attack. So I was much more pleased second half. I think we showed who we are much more. So that's an area we need to improve going forward. I'm pleased with second half, I'm very pleased with the win, but we need to improve the quality on the ball. You know, I think it shows a little bit about the squad that just blend in quickly. And Brian, he had a promising debut in only 15 minutes, something like that, the same with Drew. But they were just ready and they went in there and gave everything for the team. It's nice we're putting two 19-year-old players on the pitch and just go in there before.
Love Sport. Well, that was Thomas Frank's reaction to the victory at Middlesbrough. I have to say, chaps, I really enjoy listening to Thomas Frank. Just the way he seems so methodical in a way that you're not used to hearing from some English managers, especially the more old school managers. And the fact that he said he got them in at half time and he identified those three things. They needed to be more aware. They were too soft and not good enough on the ball, Billy.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well because he is very methodical. I think it's very much the Brentford way where they plan their things. They've been planning, you know, the way the club's going to go for a good 5, 6, 7 years now, and it is all very methodical and they try and stick to it. If they make a mistake, they'll go left and right, and you can see it, you know, in the type of people they employ. Thomas Frank, if you met him, honestly, he's a brilliant bloke. He's a lovely bloke. He's a people person, but also he's a really real football person. All he wants to do is talk football, but also he's really logical and methodical. And it's interesting because if you heard Ollie Watkins, you know, he talked about that game a little bit more, and he talked about at half time, he said, Thomas gave us a good talking to. If this was me, I probably would have been a little bit more sort of ferocious, is what he said, I think, to him. But obviously, he came in there and just basically said to them, in effect, guys, that was pretty rubbish. You need to sort it out. But he probably said it in a way which actually got them to tick, you know, and actually took the right buttons. And I think that's really, obviously, very, very good man management.
Yeah, it's just getting his message across, isn't it, in a calm manner. Just give him 5 minutes, let him players say what they want to say. I'm sure there was quite a few of them that sort of got up and said a few things, and then just say, right, this is what we're not doing. It's A, B and C. Change this round. And that's what happened, wasn't it? You know, as you said, we were passing too short. They weren't being brave enough to pass it beyond the number eights into like the tens, into Canos and to Malcondo. So they start doing that, and then suddenly they're bypassing a few of the Middlesbrough midfield and they're getting higher territory up the pitch and able to play from there. So it changes the game. Just one or two messages, but if you do it calmly, in a calm manner, without the screaming and the shouting of a Roy Keane and teacups flying everywhere, you know, they're young players. And that's the thing, because they're all young players. You know, as he said there, you know, two 19-year-olds coming off the bench. What's the point? Why would you scream and shout at two 19? They're learning their trade. They're learning the game. So, you know, Let them learn properly.
And it's interesting, you're right there, Jerry. It's interesting you say that about Brentford because, you know, we knew that last season we were one of the youngest squads in the Championship. And this time again, come around, we thought, yes, let's sign a bit of experience. So we've got Pontus Janssen in there. We've got a few players. But still, we are down. There's some stats that have come out now where we have got the highest amount of minutes played for young players.
For under 23s
in the whole of the EFL. Again, like, you know, by far, you know, I think we've got about 1,000 sort of kind of 130 minutes of under 23s. And the teams that actually don't have under 23s, I think Fulham have got 0 minutes of under 23s. And Cardiff have got about 90 minutes of playing under 23s. So they're obviously trying to play real tried and tested people. So for us, we're quite proud of the fact that we're bringing these young kids through, but at the same time, we've still got that slight inexperience thing. So I think something like at the beginning of this season, we're still going to make mistakes. It's going to take us, you know, a month, maybe a month and a half, 2 months, 3 months, maybe to try and get under there because they're a lot younger.
Absolutely. And the hero of the day, of course, was Ollie Watkins scoring a goal after signing a new deal at the club. And Thomas Frank also said some lovely things about him after the game and the fact that we had to sell the best number nine in the league, but now the new number nine has scored. So it's a case of job done. Here's what Ollie had to say after the game.
I'm delighted, firstly, to sign a new contract and stay here. You know, that's what I wanted to do, and I'm grateful that the club have offered me the contract. So I'm happy, and on the performance today, that's even better. I think so. I'm capable of it. I haven't had that many run of games there. So people have to be patient with me, but I think once I get the hang of it, yeah, I can cause a threat to defences and I can score some goals.
Just be patient with me, he says. Yeah. Is the job done? Is Brentford's new striker found in Ollie Watkins?
I think it's an option. I think that Ollie's there. And also the other thing is it's not going to happen overnight. I think what's happened is that because you always knew that he wasn't in that role before and he would slip in there and then Neil would come back in, you know, you think, Ollie's there temporarily. But now, I think the onus is on him more so in training now. He's going to be spending a lot more time, actually, I think, training in that position. And it might take a month, it might take 6 weeks for that to happen. But, you know, he's starting to learn that he has to play in a different type of role. When he first came to Brentford, we all thought he's going to be a striker. But he actually said that he preferred playing out on the wing. And I think probably because he likes getting the ball, bringing about running
space,
with the ball,
yeah.
You know. So, but now he's got to probably sort of, to a certain extent, rely on people playing the ball into him. And also he has to be a different type of discipline, where sometimes he might have to come and try and find the ball a little, you know, a little bit, or sometimes he might just to play it a different way. So for him, I'm thinking it's difficult for him because he has to retrain his brain to a certain extent. But like I said to you, don't forget that we've got Halil as well, you know, the Turkish striker who actually scored, you know, he signs for us on the Thursday and then he goes back to Holland, to Sparta Rotterdam, and then he scores for them on the Friday.
Screamer
and
too,
you know, yeah. Brilliant goal, scores a goal, which is very my daughter's watching it, who you met last week. She was sitting in the studio, she's only 10 years old, and she went, that goal was really like Neil Maupay. It was, like, you know what I'm saying? So she spots these things. So yeah, it was very Maupay-ish, that goal. So Halil, I thought that we might have actually managed to drag him in a little bit early from Sparta, you know, even if we have to give him a little bit of money and stuff like that to try and get him early, and I thought he might have been in this week, but unfortunately that's not the case. He'll be with Sparta till January, so we need to do what we have to do and keep our heads above water. Then all of a sudden we're going to have another striker who's been playing matches from Sparta to come in January. So all of a sudden Ollie may be in the middle, or he may be out the wing, or, you know, you just never know.
Absolutely. Options at Griffin Park this season. Right, next up, we are going to be looking ahead to the game against Cambridge in the League Cup tomorrow night, and also looking back at a momentous occasion from the 98-99 season.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport Radio and the Brentford Fan Show with the guys from Besotted, Billy the B Grant and Jerry the Cabby Burke. Right, we're going to discuss Cambridge United now, chaps. Billy's got his hand up. He can't wait to start talking.
I'm telling you, I've got my hands in the air because, like I said, tell you why my hands are in the air is because Owusu had his hands in the air when he scored against Cambridge at that time. And I'll tell you what it is, right? I was thinking about this and I thought, God, we haven't played Cambridge for such a long time, really. And the thing about it is that Cambridge were actually part of the furniture. Remember back in the day, we literally used to play them every year. And it was like a sort of really bog standard sort of mid-table third division, you know, third tier match. At the time, you know,
unremarkable was probably the term.
Yeah,
you're looking
it was though, you know. So we used to play Cambridge and we were there, and they beat us. Some, to be fair, I was looking at the records, and in the '80s, we kind of had the better of them. You know, they come out of the first time we played them in 1970, then they came through, and then the '80s they became a third division side like us, third tier, and we had the better of them overall all the way through the '80s, pretty much until the back end of the '80s, and that's when they got good. They had John Beck as their manager, and they had Dion Dublin, who played for them, scored at playoff final against Cheetahfield / Chesterfield in the fourth division, and that was the first
Cheetahfield.
That's what we call it.
It's a bit of history here.
There is a bit of history, actually. Yeah, we shall move on.
Okay,
all right, and first ever playoff finals goal was Dion Dublin against Cheetahfield, and so they got promoted, and they got promoted twice in a row, and they got up to the old first division, which is now the Championship as well. And that I remember that rise because we played Cambridge at one time, and I just remember playing them, and I remember Dublin, he was really big and he was strong. He probably scored against us, and I actually really liked Dion Dublin at the time because he was a back player who was in the ascendancy. You know, all black players that are doing things out there, for me being a black football fan, I did have respect and I had to tip my cap to them. So Dion Dublin, for me, the fact they came from Division 4 and was going up to Division 2, I really liked him. Even when, you know, I didn't want him to score against us. And also the other thing is that his brother Ash lived around the corner from me. Or he had a studio. He used to make reggae records, like, you know what I'm saying, in his basement, literally on Churchfield Road in Acton. And I used to pop down there. And
I used to live up just around the corner from that myself.
That's right, yeah. So I used to pop down there, and I used to hire a sound system from him for my house party. So I used to get these massive, great big sort of reggae sound systems, wheel it down the road from me and Dion Dublin's
now
brother.
Now I know who to blame, right?
Yeah, well, those noise complaints.
That's right, 6 o'clock in the morning. So Ash Dublin, big shout out to you, mate, as well. I'll tell you something, those are wicked parties, and thanks for the system, mate. Thanks for the deal, you know. but we shall move on. Like I said, you, these Cambridge memories. But we were just talking about, you know, players who played, because we're talking about Dion Dublin. Obviously as well, there's also Steve Butler, who scored loads of goals for Cambridge, but I didn't realise he also played for Brentford before he went to Cambridge in the early 80s, and he was rubbish for Brentford, but he was brilliant for Cambridge.
He carried on from us as well, because he didn't do anything, and then I think he ended up in Maidstone, something like that. Steve Butler, big blonde hair, wasn't he?
That's
about
right.
6'3", 6'4", yeah.
That's right, so And so we were just going through what other players played for both teams as well. Remember David Crown as well? I mean, apparently Crown was there. He was one of the early wingers as well from Brentford.
Probably just early part of my time going, actually, Dave Crown. I don't not too many memories of him.
No.
But Andy Sinton would be the big big name.
Yeah, we signed him from Cambridge, if I remember rightly, and he was a big player for Brentford, did a lot of really good things for us, then went on to QPR, and was a little bit gutty that he actually thinks that QPR is his main team, and he's forgotten he ever played for Brentford as well. Who else? Robbie Cook. Now, Robbie Cook, he was a brilliant player for us as well. We signed him. He scored 14 for 65 at Cambridge, and then he signed for us. He scored 53 in 125 games, including that game, which I'll never forget, when we scored down at Bournemouth in the Leyland DAF Southern semi-final, the game that got us to Wembley, when we played Wigan the following one, and it was a night game, and Robbie Cook scored a goal. I remember he just slid on his knees towards the fans who were there beyond the end. It was an absolutely brilliant Robbie Cook. You remember that one?
I don't remember that goal, but I remember him vividly. Yeah, a little sort of red head, curly hair. Good little sniffer in the box, wasn't he, Cook?
That's right, as well.
Probably unlucky he didn't go further than us, really, up the leagues. With a good goal-scoring record.
That's right. Andy Sinton as well. Andy Sinton scored for... Andy Sinton, we talked about Dean Holdsworth. He finished up his career as well because he started his career at Brentford.
I never knew that, actually.
Yeah, he started at Brentford.
I have to tell you, Billy and Jerry, that we have had a WhatsApp in. Just as you were announcing Robbie Cook, Malky B from Hounslow just sent us a message on WhatsApp just screaming, Robbie Cook! Obviously, as you were reading them out, he thought of Robbie Cook.
Telling you, he's a football agent now, actually. He was... I'm not sure if he's still working with David Moyes, but, you know, the knowledge here, the B knowledge is coming out. Like, but yeah, he was working with David Moyes, and he was at Man United, if I remember rightly, and he was also at Everton. And there was rumours that he was going to come to Brentford as the director of football or the chief scout, but I'm not sure if that's 100% true. That might have just been wafting around, and knowing Brentford, we don't go for those big timers now. We always go left field, so maybe that was just somebody just made it up, like in the pub, like something like we do.
When you think of those days, that there is, I can tell by the way you're talking, there's a real romanticism about that era. Brentford are in a different stage now. You're obviously challenging for honours, which you have done in the past, but now there's a real in the ascendancy with the new stadium as well. How do you compare the two eras? Because some football fans think, oh, it was so much better in that day when there wasn't so much pressure and we used to get on with fans and there were these players that were seen to be closer to the fans. How do you compare the two eras?
Well, I think we're still close to the players. Mm-hmm. You know, that's never changed. And, you know, the fact that they walk from the hotel to the ground, you know, I can't imagine when Pontius Janssen signed for us that he ever thought that that was going to be a case, you know. Suddenly on a Saturday, yeah, it's half one, off you go, lads. He's probably sitting there waiting for the coach. No, it's walk up the road, you know, that's the way it is. But those days, I don't know, they still feel sort of close. I don't think there's much change. You still want to win games, regardless of what division you're in or, you know, the magnitude of the game. It's still a game you just want to win. I think back to that era, and I just think of the pitches, just the absolute mud baths that they were, and, you know, wet and sodden, and, you know, early 80s. I guess when I first started going, sort of early 80s, early mid 80s, it was Griffin Park with about 4,500 in there, you know, and it was the big Royal Oak, and we're all congregated in one little bit in the middle, just to, you know, probably more for warmth than anything else.
I think, you know, one thing is that when you're younger, those are your formative years. So when you go to football, those are the years that you remember. So even if you're in the lower fourth division, when you're sort of kind of 10, 11, you know, 13, 14, you remember those years. And I think for some of the kids who are 17, 18, 16, 15 now, they'll remember these years now and think they're the best years ever. But the one thing obviously about those years is that, you know, you went to football regardless. It didn't matter. It was win or lose. You went there to meet your mates, have a laugh, have some drinks, or, you know, probably too young to drink as well as the time. But also the players were, I think, closer than they are now, because there was less of this media culture. So, you know, when we sort of started the Besotted thing, you know, Lloyd Owusu come down the pub, you know, Iger Anderson used to come down the pub, Terry Evans invited us down to his local pub, you know, I mean, Dennis Salmon invited us to his house in South End one time for tea. Yeah. You know, just things like that that just used to happen. You know, it was definitely a lot closeness. You know, after we beat Manchester City in the FA Cup, we've gone up in the players' bar and we're drinking with Steve Perriman and all the players, you know, afterwards till 11 o'clock at night. And Steve Perriman gives us a lift home in my car, you know what I'm saying, the manager. Yeah. So kind of there's a definite difference now than it was then. There's obviously a lot more, slightly more corporate and slightly more, you know, there's a lot more rules in place, but, you know, we still try to keep an earthier feel.
I mean, the other thing I remember is as a kid as well, regardless of what game it was, when the ref blew the final whistle, you were over the barriers and onto the pitch, you know, up with, you know, your hero, because they are your heroes. So I guess Brentford are doing the best as they can in this kind of modern football to sort of make kids feel that they are part of something and get the players close to them with the family days and everything else, you know. But again, this security has come into play, hasn't it, in the last sort of modern era?
It has indeed. Well, it is 20 years, chat, since that wonderful day in May 1999. After relegation the previous season, of course, Brentford won the then third division, it was called at the
it's
time.
It's easiest to call the third tier, because then you know exactly what we're talking about, then, didn't you?
Absolutely, yes. And we've spoken, obviously, to the hero on that day, Lloyd Owusu, and also Darren Powell, who recalled that great victory against Cambridge, winner takes all, in 1999.
We knew going into that game, both teams already promoted, as everyone knows, but it was winner takes all. Whoever won that game actually won the actual league. And our preparation was brilliant. Like you say, we were at the hotel the night before. Just had a good night with the boys, pre-match meal, and then in the afternoon on Saturday morning, just went for a nice little stroll along the river and everything. Like I said, we saw you fans as well.
We saw
you guys, and then like I said, we just had to. We got to the ground, and then the atmosphere you guys created, though, like Darren said about Brentford, it's all about a family-based club and a real supporter club. You were there in your droves. I mean, what we probably had, what, 1,500 Brentford fans there. It was just a dream come true. I mean, for us, it was exceptional.
I remember the day. I just thought it was going to be our day in terms of, and I guess now, just bumping into the supporters, it was nostalgic. You know, just bumping into the supporters just gave us that extra motivation. Like, so our run was good leading into him. We was all confident, and you know, Lloyd was scoring God knows how many goals and stuff, and we was all confident. It was just youthful exuberance, and you know, and I'm not just saying it because we're amongst you, but that the morning, it was a nice sunny day and stuff, and then come and see the supporters, and the supporters are just, you know, bigging you up and stuff. You just felt that it just gave you an extra drive, you know. And obviously, after we won the game, it was just obviously brilliant. From the start of the season to that point, I would have never guessed that I would have been part of that.
It was still a cagey game though.
Yeah, like, it was. So when
he won it 1-0, but obviously they had quite a few chances. You know what I mean? Trevor Benjamin up top as well. You know what I mean?
Butler. He was giving was it you Martin Butler.
Martin Butler. I mean, them two are good strikers. I mean, they gave Darren and Herman, you know what I mean, a good run out as well. But again, luckily for ourselves, they made a mistake with and I remember Andy Woodman, I think it was a massive boot up top, and their centre half tried to head it, or whether he tried to head it back to the goalkeeper, I just sort of played off his shoulder, and I just saw the goalkeeper coming out, advancing, and I just dinked it over him, and then as that goal went in.
As soon as they scored that, I said they will not score past us. There's no chance to win the league. There was no chance that they was going to win, score that. That's all we needed. We just needed that goal. And we said there's no chance that they was going to score.
Exactly.
Excuse my language.
No, it's true, but like, true. And also, like you say, Dees, like when truth. You look at the like when I was even when I see that goal now, but you see the excitement from you fans, all you guys whoever was there that day, just the joy on your faces and the real drive just to take us through that last 15, 20 minutes of that game to see the game out 1-0. It was just for me, Roy the Rovers stuff. It was just brilliant.
Some great memories there, Billy.
Absolutely. As he said, Roy of the Rovers stuff. Just to let you know, that was from Lloyd Owusu and Darren Powell. They're reflecting on Brentford's victory up at Cambridge. That was recorded at the Besotted Pride of West London Christmas Bees Up, which is at the Fuller's Brewery. And we haven't put that out yet, so it's still an exclusive. And that is an exclusive little kit for that. But we're going to put it out hopefully within the next week or two, possibly by the weekend or the weekend after. So we're going to put that out, and it's all full glory. You should listen to it. It's absolutely wicked, like you said. And also what we've got is we're actually going to be announcing at the same time a number of Legends events that we're going to be putting out over this year to commemorate Brentford's last season at Griffin Park, including an event on Saturday the 31st of August. So it's the Derby game. We're going to be doing something on that day as well. So hopefully within the next week or so, we're going to announce that. So look out for the podcast and look out for the events as well.
Absolutely. Look out for them. Just talking about that game in general and the season, I suppose, in general, some names there that they mentioned, obviously Trevor Benjamin and Martin Butler were up top for Cambridge, but up top for you guys, like Lloyd Owusu was there, Andy Scott was there, Scott Partridge, who came in that season as well, spent a lot of money under Ron Knowles at the time, Herman Hreiðarsson deciding to go pretty much from the top tier to the bottom tier. It was quite a special season, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant season, and I have to say, because we've been promoted, I think, four times in my lifetime, twice in Division 2, twice in the third tier, twice in the second tier we've been promoted from. And I still going back to, is it Peterborough your favourite one? Is Cambridge your favourite one? I mean, Cambridge for me was a perfect, perfect moment because everything about the day was just brilliant. You know, punting on the river as we all went down there. We were all wearing white wigs and we're wearing Cambridge University sort of jackets and stuff like that, you know. And then the players came out on their walk as they were talking about and they met all the fans. So, you know, we met them beforehand on this sort of kind of blazing day. And then we went there, we scored the goal, you know, it was fantastic. And I'd organised a coach and I had about sort of kind of 30 bottles of champagne underneath just in case we won the league. And when he came out, you know, got them all out for everybody. So we, you know, honestly, everything just kind of worked perfectly on that day. So for me, it was just, it was a really, really great day. But like I said to the players that we had that season as well, you know, Ida Enzo, so Herman Hreiðarsson signed for £750,000. I mean, Rod knows, you know, he put his money into his pocket at the time, but as we know now, it wasn't actually his money because it was our money, and all things went horribly wrong after that. But we'll move on from that because that's the negative side of things, because we've moved on from that. But we have to remember that we got some joy out of that. even though if we probably knew how the money's been spent, we probably would have said to him, like, you know, please don't sort of kind of, you know, have three head coaches and, you know, buy these £1 million players, you know. And also the other thing is, you speak to the players, they were saying that we were the money team. So we were playing all these teams, like they're going out to Plymouth and stuff like that, and they were trying to rough us up because they were like, we were like the Chelsea on the Man United of the third tier at the time, or fourth tier actually at the time, you know. And it was like, it was really, really, really weird sort of kind of thinking that we're actually Brentford, but we were actually the money bags.
There was such a gap as well in terms of when you hit the top of the table. You had a decent run at the start of the season, top in October, and then it wasn't until pretty much the penultimate game that you got to the top again. So an incredible run, a few dodgy moments in January and February and November as well, where you lost a few games on the bounce. But you talk of players, Paul Evans came in as captain, the halfway line hero, Paul Evans. The one that sticks out for me is Martin Rowland, because he was at Wickham as a kid and then went to Farnborough, and that's where you captured him from.
We did, and Rowland was great for us that season, and he was, you know, it's fantastic. And if you speak to all the players, they speak very fondly. I mean, after Lloyd that night, or Lloyd Owusu, and he went with us, and after that they went off and met Martin Rowland the next day, because they all still meet up. So he met up with, like, you know, about 8 or 9 of the Brentford sort of promotion team as well, because he'd flown in from Australia especially for this do for us as well. So that was quite good. But you know, Marlon Rowlands was a great player for us. Unfortunately, he went off to QPR and he did a bit of badge kissing and sort of, you know, just was not very nice about Brentford at all. So Brentford fans aren't very fond of him. So don't mention Martin Rowlands.
Sorry,
ever again.
I brought up a bad egg. I do apologise. I was thinking the Wickham fans would probably regret it more because they lost him.
He was a good player, though. To be fair to me, he was a good player. But yeah, badge kissing.
Okay. No, taken. I will definitely never mention him again. Right, that was a Cambridge contest of old. After this, we're going to be looking to tomorrow's game, speaking to Ollie Slack from Cambridge United's biggest fan page, Yabba TV.
Love Sport.
Yes, it is the opposition view on the Brentford Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. Delighted to say we've got Ollie Slack on the line from Yabba TV, Cambridge United's biggest fan page. How are you doing, Ollie?
Yeah,
he's still there.
Are you there, Ollie?
Yeah, I'm good, Frank. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm joined by Billy the Bee Grant and Jerry the Cadbird from Besotted. What would you like to say?
Hey, how are you doing, Ollie? You all good, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We just had a little, I don't know, you probably didn't. We had a bit of a reminiscence session now, actually. We were talking about the old Cambridge days and the Dion Dublins of the world and your,
John Beck.
And
And we were sort of saying, you know, we quite like Cambridge. They were sort of kind of punching above their weight now. But obviously, you know, you had a little bit of a bad spell where you went out the league for a bit, then you've come back and there's a bit of a renaissance now. I mean, what's the new Cambridge saying?
It's a strange sort of situation, really, because, like you say, obviously went out of the league in the early 2000s and then came back under Richard Money in 2014. And since then, they've sort of just hovered really above the relegation spots and had a couple of seasons back in League Two where they sort of flirted with the playoffs. We didn't really come anywhere close, but sort of around 11th or 12th. And then the last couple of seasons, they've been, again, sort of back struggling again just above the relegation zone. Last year was a tricky year, because the board said they had to cut their cloth in terms of spending. So Joe Dunn was the manager at the time, and he was there on a pretty low budget and didn't really get many players in, or the players in he would like. And then, of course, subsequently he was sacked. Colin Caldwell came in, and this season had a bit more money to spend. And he's brought in, by the looks of it so far, some decent players. And the hopes for this season, I guess, is just to try and push up a bit more higher in the league and, I guess, stabilise as a League Two club now and not have to worry about the teams over your shoulder.
So, Ollie, who do we need to be looking out for, us Brentford fans? Who do we need to be looking out for tomorrow? Who can cause us problems?
Good question. Well, we signed a young striker called Andrew Dallas from Rangers, a 20-year-old, for an undisclosed fee, which is our first signing for an undisclosed fee for a while, actually. And he was tipped to be quite a decent prospect, and many at Rangers were surprised that he left. So he's probably one to look out for. Luke Hannant signed from Port Vale at the start of the season really well. The use number 7. But also, interestingly, one player Cambridge fans haven't actually seen yet is a striker called Harvey Nibbs from Aston Villa. We signed him in the summer and he picked up an injury in pre-season. And the use fans haven't seen much of him yet, but Colin Caldwell has said that he's likely to be involved tomorrow evening. So I'm sure both United fans and Brent fans are pretty excited to see him play.
I mean, it's interesting. You've got Colin Caldwell, obviously, who's at Villa, assistant Brighton. You know, he did a lot of assistants, you know, Brighton, Hove Albion, Norwich, Birmingham City, even Newcastle United. I mean, back in the day, of course, he was manager at Nottingham Forest and Hibs. But this is, in effect, it's like, you know, he's taken on the mantle as a full-on manager, as a full-on head coach now. what difference has he made? Because when he started with you, I think you were in the doldrums a little bit, weren't you?
Yeah, certainly were. When Joe Dunn was here last year, we actually played some really good football under Joe, but just couldn't find the back of the net. Probably one of the reasons, because, like I said, he didn't have a big budget to bring in a striker. But Colin came in and just stabilised us, really sorted the defence out straight away, and we looked immediately a lot more solid. And he's such a relaxed man. You talk to him at the training ground and when you go over to press conferences and have a chat with him, and you wouldn't think he's a football manager because he's so relaxed, so calm, and that must rub off on the players. I mean, whether it's due to the fact that he probably knows if he were to leave Cambridge, you could quite easily get a job as, say, Chris Outman or Steve Bruce's assistant, wherever he went, because obviously he's had that experience at Premier League level. But I think dropping down to League Two, he wanted that challenge again to maybe prove to himself or just have another crack at being a first-team manager. But he is probably one of the most relaxed, calm men you'll ever meet.
What you'll notice is that with Brentford, especially when it comes to the League Cup, this has been for years now, we always change our team. We always have our inverted commas, and I put it in inverted commas, second string team out. Okay, we're a championship side, so you know, obviously we've got a number of decent players. So again, it's, you know, it still is second string to a certain extent. Sometimes it frustrates Brentford fans because it's for a League Cup and for the FA Cup, we put out second string, and then afterwards we don't do it very well. Cambridge United. Are you in that game? I mean, Calderwood, do you think he's going to put out a team and try out some new players, or do you think he's going to go for it against the Bees tomorrow night?
It's a tricky one to say, because obviously the U's haven't been past the first round only once, I think, about the last seven occasions. So you look at that history and you might think, obviously, the fans making the trip down will also want a little bit of a cup run. Of course, we had a taste of it with the Man United tie in the FA Cup a couple of years back. But I honestly think that Colin will be fully concentrated on the league. And he said that he might have to make a couple of changes through injury anyway, because our right-back got injured on the weekend against Newport. So Colin might bring in a couple of youngsters, and I think he'd have probably done that anyway, really, to maybe test a few things out and see what the rest of the squad's capable like to really mount some sort of challenge in League Two. I think that's where his main concentration lies. And I think he'll probably use tomorrow night's game as a bit of an exercise to test out some other players.
All right, OK, so very briefly, big match tomorrow, Bees, the Cambridge, score prediction.
Oh, I did a score prediction in the Brentford programme, and I did unfortunately go out something like a goal to nil victory for Brentford, because the U's struggled this season. But then the U's have actually kept a couple of clean sheets. So I'll reduce the goals I went for. I went for a 3-0 Brentford win. I'll go for a 2-0 Brentford win.
Right. Okay, well, we'll do our predictions at the end of this show. But look, it's really good chatting to you. Hopefully we might catch up for you tomorrow night at Griffin Park.
Yes.
Nice one.
Take care, mate.
Cheers for joining us, Ollie. That was Ollie Slack from Yabba TV, Cambridge United's biggest fan page. Of course, they started the season with two goalless draws, gents.
Oh, so yeah, and we don't like teams coming down there and tightening up and sort of putting eight men in the midfield, because it's we kind of struggle against that kind of thing, but you never know. And I think the thing about it, Jerry, again, a big discussion for us is like team selection. Normally for the League Cup, we all of a sudden we change the team quite a lot, but for this one, it actually could be a positive move, because we brought in so many new players. Some of these players actually have to get a game, and we're really excited to see them get a game. So we're sitting there trying to pick what the team's going to be, and we were struggling a bit now, weren't we?
Well, I kind of, it's what way he wants to go with this, isn't it, for Thomas Frank? Whether he just thinks this is a one-off game and I'm just going to go and win it, and therefore he just changes the team completely, or he thinks, you know what, I'll use this as a to get the likes of Watkins used to playing in the number nine, and I want to get the relationship between the centre half. So, you know, I think it'll be a bit of a mix and match team out there tomorrow.
Valencia hopefully will show his face, the new signing, and Mbeumo show his face as well. And I think that'll be a really, really good start for us as well. And don't forget, tickets are available still. £5 adult standing, £10 sitting, £1 kids at Griffin Park. I think you could even pay on the day as well. And Hull as well on Saturday's Kid for a Quid, or Quid for a Kid, or whatever you call it. Kids for a Quid as well. It's Hull on Saturday, £1 and £20 for adults as well. So you should get down there. Griffin Park's really buzzing at the moment now. So definitely, definitely just go there. Forget this Premiership nonsense or Premier League nonsense.
And you've got a Besotted podcast live on Thursday as
that's,
well.
That's right. Podcast should be live on Thursday as well. Pride of Block West London. You can check it out as well. So we'll have post-Cambridge game as well. And also we've got Bobby from Hull giving her view on the Hull game as well. So we'll have two little podcasts, one big one and one little preview podcast.
Lovely stuff. Very quickly, a result for tomorrow. Prediction. Just need the result.
3-0.
3-0.
2-0.
2-0. There we go. Right, that was the Brentford fan show on Love Sport Radio. We'll be back at 8 p.m. next Monday.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.